WLOB FM 100.5.
And now, live from the Rowe Auto Group Westbrook Auburn Studios, it's Ray Richardson on WLOB 100.5 FM.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful, a miracle, how it was beautiful, magical, and all the birds in the trees, they'd be singing so happily.
It is 7:37, you're listening to 100.5 FM. Thank you for joining us this morning. We're, of course, live in the Rowe Auto Group, Westbrook Auburn Studios. You can find out more by going to Rowe's website, RoweAutoGroup.com. We've been talking about LD-1313. They're calling it death with dignity. I'm calling it what it is, assisted suicide, euthanasia, and more importantly, a slippery slope in the culture of death that we seem to worship in this country these days. Whether it's on the front end or the back end, we just seem to have this fascination with taking the life of people we don't find useful in one way or another, or if they're an inconvenience. And let's be honest here, folks, and we're going to get to our guests in just a moment. If you think that death with dignity does not become death with obligation, meaning that you have a parent or a loved one who is a burden on your finances with their medical issues in the hospital, the doctors don't see much hope. And the kids say at some point, you know, Mom, look, we love you to death, but you don't have a life anymore. You're laying in this hospital bed. You're in pain. It's going to cost us at least another $100,000. But if you are willing to take your own life, you can spare yourself the pain and spare us the finances. If you think this isn't going to happen, folks, you're just not paying attention to what's happened in the culture of this country and, frankly, the culture of the world. Carol Conley is joining us. Carol is the head of the Christian Civic League of Maine. Carol, thanks for hanging around. Hello? Is he not with us?
Oh, you're there.
Okay. All right. There you are.
I had you on mute so he didn't hear my dog barking.
No. It's okay. Well, we love dogs, so it'll be okay. Real quick, before we get back to you, I've gotten some texts. Debbie got a call. The governor's message line is his voicemail box is full, but you can email her, governor@maine.gov. Send her a very respectful email, if you will. If you don't have time to write it down, it's on our website, WLOBradio.com. Just look in the upper right-hand corner, and the information is there. Carol Conley is joining us.
Yeah, and that number will clear out later this morning.
Right.
Pull in and, you know, get all the messages as well. So, no, thank you, Ray, for bringing that up. And by the way, thank you for playing Supertramp. Maybe you guys could end with Long Way Home, you know, after I get done here. It's my favorite group. So, you know, the most respected expert in this field and the most experienced is Candace Powell, who's the executive director of Maine's Hospice Council and the Center for the End of Life Care. Just incredibly respected person. And, you know, she gave a testimony, and I believe it was Margaret Craven from Auburn that used this quote. But she referenced her outrage that people don't have access to comprehensive resources like hospice and palliative care in Maine because we're rural, you know, and poor. And those are really the only thing that truly offers dignity, you know, to patients at this end of life. But she asked this very pointed question to the legislature. She said, I challenge our legislators to look in the mirror and ask, am I properly informed and fully prepared to make a policy decision that will change how culture looks at and approaches the end of life care from here out? That's the question that we really are asking the governor to make as well right now. And, you know, when we talk about doctor prescribed death, you mentioned the 17-year-old and, you know, just happened to go to one medical doctor to do that without parental consent. In Oregon, over the last 20 years, Ray, less than 1% of individuals that have sought to end their lives because they can, and as you mentioned rightly so, it's an obligation to death, not a right to death, less than 1% have sought mental health counseling before making that decision.
Right.
So the whole idea about this being set up and the requirements and so on is just an absolute fallacy.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, I unfortunately, I've had a number of people that I've known in my life, either known them directly or known their parents, where children have committed suicide. And I will never forget. And she listens to this program a lot, so maybe she's listening right now. I won't mention her name, but she lives down in North Carolina, and I'll never forget. She called me. Her son, who was just a wonderful young man, graduated from law school, and she went over to his house and found him hanging from a tree. And what troubled her so greatly is that would he go to heaven? He believed in Jesus, but would he go to heaven? And I talked with her a long time and just said, anyone who takes their own life is clearly in a mental health crisis. They're either mentally ill or they're in just such distress. They're not thinking clearly. God isn't going to penalize someone who loves Jesus for being sick. I mean, he wouldn't condemn someone with cancer who dies. So mental health issues, mental illness is an illness. And when someone takes their own life through suicide, in that moment, they're clearly not well. And to your point about mental health counseling, they're not doing it. And when people make these kinds of decisions, they are clearly in such distress, they're not thinking clearly.
And think about this bill, LD 1313. It's 18-year-olds, Ray. You know, Dana Dow, the minority leader in the Senate, stood up and said this. He said, you know what? Maine doesn't have the death penalty, but just suppose we did. And you have an 18-year-old that is, you know, asked, you know, do you have any final requests before you take your life? And the 18-year-old says, yes, I'd like a pack of cigarettes and a glass of Jack Daniels, you know. And they say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, in the state of Maine, we can't give that to you, but we right. can offer you a deadly cocktail. You know, that is the juxtaposition that we are looking at specifically with this bill. That is one of the, you know, that 18-year-old can make this decision but can't buy a pack of cigarettes in this state. And it's ludicrous.
It is ludicrous, you know, and it's all part of this culture. These are political arguments these people are making. These aren't moral arguments. They aren't philosophical arguments. They aren't principled arguments, and they shouldn't be legal arguments. This is a political culture of the moment argument that they're making. My daughters, I have two daughters, I have four children, my girls are my youngest, and I remember distinctly when my youngest daughter, who's now about to be 21, but when she was under the age of 17, she wanted to get her ears pierced, a second piercing in her ear lobe. We had to give consent. We had to give consent. But she could have gotten an abortion without us ever knowing. I mean, this is just, we're in la-la land here, Carol. And you know, people ask me all the time, what do we do? My first thing is what I do every day. In fact, I've done it while we're on the air together. It's just pray for the people that we elect that somehow God will reach them and give them guidance and wisdom and get them out of whatever it is they're in, because they're clearly, these elected people are in mental stress. They really are, because there's no way in the world that sane people would be making these kinds of decisions. They're being driven by politics, by outrageous advocates who don't care about human beings. And I believe that in my heart. This isn't radio talk, hyperbole. I don't believe these advocates care about human beings, because what they consistently advocate is for the very worst of the human condition.
Yeah, that cynicism, Ray, is certainly from a despair. And you are so right. You know, 1 Timothy chapter 2, you know, Paul tells us to, you know, that we are to pray for all men, but especially for the king and those that God has ordained to be in power, you know, and that's not talking about just the ones we agree with politically. That's all those that are in power. God has ordained. Why? That we might live peaceful lives with all dignity and righteousness. You know, right. Those things, when we talk about peace, it's talking about, that's not the peace that Christ gives us. That's talking about the lack of, you know, lack of conflict and the morality. And dignity is how we treat each other. So even though you and I firmly believe in eternity, and we were just talking about how if we put our faith in Christ, that, you know, our destiny is taken care of and under the blood of Christ. But yet, we as Christians have to love our neighbors and to advocate for these truths, because there are temporal benefits as well to a society that lines up with these truths. So people might not like it. Sometimes we may be in the minority. But it's not a matter to win an argument. It's because we really love people and want them to know the benefits of these truths, both on the temporal and the eternal side.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, we've been on this kick all year long about being bold. And I wrote a piece for our magazine last month about being bold, and part of it is being bold in your faith. And being bold in your faith doesn't mean being in someone's face about it. It does mean looking for opportunities in a loving, Christ-like way of sharing the good news, because these people are clearly in distress. They are making worldly decisions, not moral decisions. They're caught up in the culture of the moment, which is why we've seen the degradation of the culture. And look, you know, America's not alone. This has happened throughout civilization. And the greatest example, of course, is the Empire of Rome and how it fell. Great nations don't fall from without. They fall from within. And we're facing this right now. And people say, oh, that's so dramatic and blah, blah, blah. All you have to do is look at the last 50 years and what's happened in our culture. Today in America, 43% of all children are born in a home where there is no father active in the house and active in their lives. And we wonder why we're in this mess. It's because the children are lacking the balance between the two parents that are supposed to raise them together, love them together, support them together, give them that unconditional support so they have the confidence to navigate the tough times in their life. We don't have that. We're facing this crisis here. And what do we end up with? We end up with people who don't have the tools to navigate the culture.
You know, Ray, and you mentioned the fall of Rome, but it's not inevitable. You know, when we look at pre-Wesleyan revival in England, England was in a bad place. I mean, their culture was about to collapse, and there was a tremendous revival. You know, because of four or five men gathering together to pray, and eventually God used them to, I believe, you know, save England from what was going on in France and in their own country and so on. So there's always hope. You know, there's always hope, and it's with the gospel. And, you know, our work in the legislature or politics is not the hope. You know, that's for preservation, and that's for, you know, some of the temporal things that we hope for. But I hope that, you know, the Christians civically, when we advocate for these truths, I hope we never give the impression to people that our hope is in the Republican Party or that our hope is in the political system. No, we're just being salt and light that God's called us to be. But our hope is in revival. Our hope is in the church turning to itself and confessing.
And, Carol, you saw this. You witnessed it with me. 4,300 people showed up to see Franklin Graham a couple of weeks ago. In the state that is commonly known as the least church, the least religious in the country, and really in the most liberal area of the country, this side of Berkeley, California, 4,300 people showed up on a Sunday night to go hear the gospel. People are aching for this. And you're right, prayer and revival will save us. It always has. But what we are facing right now is we have a lot of people who believe the things that you and I believe, but they're sitting on the sidelines. They've got to get engaged in the game, because I believe strongly that this group that is driving this culture of death and this immorality in this country that is driving us to the brink of the abyss is happening because they're extreme, well-organized, and very loud minority. But those that agree with us, too many of them are sitting on the sidelines. And there are many ways to get involved in the game, but the first place you got to start with is prayer. We got to be praying with expectancy and urgency for the leaders. And I pray, you know, I pray for Janet Mills every single day, every single day.
Amen.
And I'm praying that God will give her the guidance and the wisdom to veto the bill we've talked about, which is LD 1313. Carol, we've got to run. As always, I appreciate you joining us.
Anytime. Thanks, Ray.
Carol Conley, Maine, the Christian Civic League of Maine at 750.